Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week, we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool? Is it shit? Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit? Welcome to the editor's meeting. Okay, and welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 22. And it's another one of those special episodes where it's just me and James. And to make it even more special, we're not even in the same room. We are in the same city.
You couldn't be bothered to come to work.
Well, I mean, like, for the listeners, there is a nationwide train strike today. But anyway, James, you're back from holiday.
Yep.
And do you feel refreshed?
I'll answer your question in a moment, Gareth. But first, I have a question of my own. Oh. Who the hell do you think you are?
Oh, wow. Wow.
Did you really think I wouldn't hear all the nasty things that you said about me while I wasn't here to defend myself? Well, I downloaded the podcast with very limited Wi-Fi, and I had to listen to the soothing sounds of the Okavango Delta being broken by Gareth fucking Carter calling me a dickhead.
Well, it was a test. It was a test, A, to see what sort of, connection you had out there. You seemingly had, good connections. That's good.
Well, it appears that I didn't quite have the connections that I thought back at home.
I mean, I thought it was nice that we were talking about you when you weren't there. I mean, it's nice as someone that does love a bit of attention, I thought you'd like it.
I'll tell you what, as well. I did the most narcissistic thing possible, and I listened to the first 2 minutes and the last 2 minutes of the podcast first, because I thought that those would be the bits where they might talk about me.
Oh, we said the really awful things about you in the middle for that very reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a test. You better go back and listen to them. Yeah, that's where your name really got sullied.
It was when Gina started talking about a cat in an airport. I thought, I've had enough of this one.
Well, I thought that was some of the best podcasts we've done.
Yeah, well, and Matt Bennett, for the first time ever, posted a message on our work WhatsApp saying, "Great podcast, guys." It was the one that I wasn't on.
I thought that must have cut deep. I thought that must have cut deep.
Oh, he's dead to me.
Fair enough. As long as you're not dead to him, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, true. He doesn't care.
So anyway, my name is Gareth Carter, as James has talked about. I don't have the middle name fucking, but if you want to call me Gareth fucking Carter, that's fine. And we are here with James, the chief editor, a.k.a. the little chief, a.k.a. little chef. So James, back in the UK, how have you found the stories? Have you even bothered looking since you got back? Or did it never stop? Were you out there in Africa, in Botswana, searching for cool shit stories as a bit of light relief from, essentially a family holiday, which I know can always get a bit fraught?
Genuinely, you're not far off. I didn't have Wi-Fi most of the time that I did, but I realise now that if I'd look at the news or something, or briefly go on social media and I'd see something interesting, my first thought was, oh, that would be good for cool shit. And then I get annoyed because it's a waste, because it's not in a week that I'm writing it.
And I bet you were fuming that none of those stories got picked up by the wider team, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
All right. Okay, well, bring us back round to some quality then. James, what's the first story you'd like to bring to the editorial meeting for the Cool Shit Podcast?
You've kind of set me up to fail there, but so this particular story is a bit of a tribute to your brother, a certain finance director by the name of Ben Carter, who for my money is one of the most proficient Excel users in all of the land, and now he may be able to put those skills to the test against other global icons of Excel, as ESPN have decided to launch the World Excel Championships.
Very exciting news for, Excel heads. Not sure if this is exciting news for, the non-Excel enthusiasts, which I basically think if there's six or 7 billion people in the world, I'm sure the Excel enthusiasts is like at most a couple of million, right? Maybe.
Even that's quite a lot, though. Do they not deserve a little World Cup if that's truly their passion? Like we've seen, well, you've certainly seen through Salford, through talking to young people all over the world, that people are quite a lot more people than you would think are very into all sorts of mad shit, and you get all of these little micro communities that are really passionate about something that most people do not give a shit about.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's a dichotomy. Because Excel is not mad shit. It's so saliently boring that it's just boring shit.
No, it's so saliently boring, and therein lies the madness. Because it's so boring that to do a whole, basically a World Cup around it, it's kind of interesting. And particularly because it's not just some nerds who are putting this on. It's ESPN, like the biggest sports broadcaster in the whole world. Like it almost feels like they're doing this for a bit of a gag, but all of the content around it looks proper. It looks like they're taking it seriously.
No, so yeah, like so I did scoot through the 2.5 hour sort of like tournament. And you're right. the presentation of it has, you know, has real feels, right? It's it feels like like they've put a bit of money behind it, right? First question, yeah. So joking aside, first question, is this a partnership with Microsoft or not?
That is a very good question. I hadn't thought about that. But it's got to be, hasn't it?
Because if it is, I kind of like it even more.
Yeah, I suddenly think that's really clever then, if it is.
There are a certain amount of people that enjoy the dark arts of Excel, right? For me, not one of them. Square, percentage sign. Blah, don't know what I've done. Don't know what I've done to get here. But I do think it's a clever piece of marketing if it is. I think we need clarification, James.
Yeah, we do. And I guess that might be something that comes in the actual newsletter, if indeed it is. But I feel like it's got to be, hasn't it?
Doesn't say, does it?
It does. It doesn't seem to say, no.
For the listeners, we've had a check, and we can't see if it is or it isn't. Which again makes me think it probably is, and that's even better, right? Like they
let's go with that. I mean, that fits what we're talking about better. So let's just say, well done, Microsoft. They did it on purpose. And to play devil's advocate, if they didn't, they're probably sitting there thinking, wow, great, cheers. because they got a load of free marketing.
For context, I'm reading an article here which was in Hypebeast, home of culture. Hypebeast decided that they were going to cover this. Or did they? Is this a partnership between Microsoft, ESPN, Hype? Are they all in it?
You've gone a bit Alex Jones here.
ESPN, yeah, ESPN, Sky Atlantic, Microsoft Excel, Hypebeast. This clearly is a globalized plot to make Excel cool, right?
Yeah, I think the Illuminati are behind it. So I like it. I like it even more now. And also I'm thinking, because back to your point about it not being mad at all, it's not a million miles away from, like, you know, all the shows that have become incredibly popular that theoretically have quite boring premises, like the Great British Bake Off, the Pottery Throwdown, the Sewing Bee, all that sort of stuff that people kind of get into because there's something quite satisfying about watching somebody kind of good at their craft, even if it's something that you kind of could never do or wouldn't even necessarily want to do.
And this is what I have a problem about The Apprentice, because I think they're missing a trick, right? Because The Apprentice claims at the beginning of each season that it's got some of the best business brains, and they're not. Yeah. So to your point, that's why I'm always like, this would be a really good show if they found people that were brilliant at their craft, i.e. people that had, you know, great entrepreneurial spirits and minds and could really, you know, talk with vision and deliver with, you know, an exciting flair for, you know, the topic. But they're not. Just a bunch of knobheads.
No, it became reality. I know it was always reality TV, but it became the worst version of reality TV. It was like Love Island in business suits sort of thing.
Any final things to any final points that you want to cover on this story?
I don't think so. I'm pretty happy with it. I'm pretty firm on this going in because I think it's genius if indeed it is Microsoft. It's got that kind of weird factor that I often look for and quite enjoy. And the fact that it's kind of permeated like hypebeast culture is next to an article about the new Yeezys or whatever. It's just quite funny to me. So I'm a big fan. And also give the nerds a break. Like let them have it. I do think though, the one thing I will say kind of against it is this does feel like the kind of obvious consequence of what happens once you start calling esports players athletes. So soon these XL wizards are going to be known as athletes.
I'm sure that will help, you know, other parts of their lives.
Well, at the bar, how are you doing, madam? I'm an athlete.
So this is reported sort of quite widely today, but Japan encourages its sober young people to drink more and boost the economy. So the Japanese government has launched a nationwide competition to revitalize the alcoholic beverage industry, which has been shrinking due to demographic changes, lifestyle choices, and coronavirus pandemic. So basically, in Japan, less and less young people are drinking, and they're talking about a load of reasons why. But the primary reason I think they're sort of hanging it on is COVID, and that people have become more insular. But it was shrinking before that, and widely talked about in Japan that it has a shrinking population. And if there's anything to get a population going, it's drink, right?
Booze, shots.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like an unplanned pregnancy to boost your population.
I hope your kids don't listen to this.
Not for another 15 years, at least.
Well, I've got a question for you on this. So back in your heyday in the mid 18th century, sure. When you were in your mid 20s, do you think you'd need the government to say to you, loosen up a bit, go and have a drink? Is this not a bit pathetic? Are Gen Z just the worst?
Well, it's good that you say that because you are Gen Z. So at least...
kind of. my earth suit is Gen Z, but spiritually, I'm all boomer, baby.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think there's obviously a problem in Japan. Or they've earmarked it as a problem for the government to step in. And I think I was looking at the stats. It says taxes on alcohol products accounted for 5% of the total revenue in 1980, but that shrunk to just 1.7 in 2020. And presumably that shrunk even more that the government have had to step in. And yeah, and you're quite right. I think drinking culture has it's been eroding in the UK as well. Like I know that's hard for you to believe.
I was going to say, then why
on your Margs Wednesdays and your Margs Thursdays.
I was going to say, if that's true, then why am I hungover?
But essentially, it has been eroding. And I don't know. I've been to Japan. I think that Japanese society is very it's a very polite society. I think that drinking has been seen as a way of getting further in work. So that you base a lot of your relationships in what is seemingly quite a polite society. You have that moment to be, you know, in a bar or a pub or whatever, and you can speak a little more freely as alcohol, you know, makes us talk like dickheads.
You're telling me.
But obviously there's, look, the government steps in, and it's a strange thing because we think about drinking in the UK, and we've always been, and certainly, like, as you've alluded to, so that sort of like late 90s lad and ladette culture to the noughties, it seemed like drinking was getting out of hand. And there's always been a message to drink less. And I think that is actually happening now. I think Gen Z, from the research that we're doing and the drinks industry, are drinking less and less. But I don't think that they're going out less. I think that it's just we've got more choices now. Do you know what I mean? Like there's more choices than just going to a pub in the evening in the sort of dark old days.
No, it's a good point. So I do think as well that in the kind of in a post-COVID world, sort of during COVID, and I certainly experienced this, a lot of people, because you weren't going out, you weren't just, other than the occasional Zoom quiz that would get out of hand, you weren't getting absolutely kind of bladdered and crawling home at 4 in the morning. And I think a lot of people probably thought, wow, I feel so much better. Do I really want to go back to that? And a lot of people haven't. And you've got so many kind of, particularly young people who have spent that time, they're on TikTok, they're starting a business from their bedroom now. I think the culture for a lot of Gen Z who aren't kind of necessarily the kind of party animals has just shifted away from needing to have a drink as that social lubricant.
And it comes back to, you know, Excel being broadcast or talked about in Hypebeast, right? I think that whereas in past sort of youth cultures, sort of like being a bit more insular was seen as quite a bad thing, quite a thing to call out. And there was a lot of bravado based around, you know, being quote unquote one of the lads. We go out, we drink, we don't give a shit. We nick cones from the street and, you know, smash up cars on the way home. But now...
I feel like you just confessed to several crimes.
But now, nerds are cool. Like, nerds are really cool now. And, like, from, you know, bird watching to Rubik's Cube, there are...
Yeah, we've gone from bird watching to bird watching.
But anyway, back to the story. What I found interesting about the story is the way that they're going to get kids to drink, or that they're proposing to get the
drink... Not kids.
Well, okay, yeah. It's focused on 20 to 39-year-olds. The country's national tax agency is running this campaign.
Is that not Saki? Saki Viva? Like, okay. Does that mean Saki life?
Yeah, I think it's like, sort of like, live the Saki life, right?
Yeah.
Saki Viva. So Saki Viva, it's encouraging people to come up with ideas for products and designs to stimulate demand amongst young people. This includes boosting Japanese alcoholic beverages such as sake, beers, whiskies. We will appeal to young people for their development and promotion of Japanese alcoholic beverages. At the same time, we will revitalize the industry. I think it seems a bit of a stretch, don't you?
A little bit, but I like the the kind of idealism of thinking, let's solve this problem through creativity. That feels like quite a nice idea to me. And see, they're putting it in the hands of sort of what young creatives to come up with the campaign that will get other young people drinking.
Yeah.
It's also just occurred to me that they're trying to go from coronavirus to a corona virus.
Yeah.
You can edit that out. The UK government, those lads and ladies, have just announced plans for the first smart prison, which will give inmates access to things like laptops and tablets, and will be powered by solar energy and produce zero emissions, and basically just generally make for a much more livable environment than previous prisons.
Yeah. So I was reading this story, and I've actually been thinking about it. I don't know why, but I was considering it. Prisons should be so much better, right? We should be making people go into prison and coming out with skills. So essentially,
yeah,
this sort of draconian view, which I feel is more of a sort of like, perhaps a more right-wing approach, which is prison is a punishment, right? But I think prison is a punishment whatever. Being told you can't leave anywhere is punishment enough. So we should be creating environments that are more nurturing. And I know a lot of people will be like, what? But I completely back my argument. That are more nurturing so that when people come out of prison, they have skills that open the door to them to see, you know, new opportunities, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head with, you have to decide whether prison is meant to be about kind of, in the first instance, separating somebody who's done something bad from the rest of society and then rehabilitating them so they can re-enter society, or whether it's meant to be punitive, which doesn't make an awful lot of sense. Just saying, you've done something bad, therefore we're going to make your life really horrible, because that's kind of writing people off completely. And also, I think there's levels of crime, aren't there? Like, I don't think you're going to get kind of serial killers in this type of prison necessarily, because they're really fucking dangerous. But people who do I don't know, fudge their taxes a bit, chaw some Cheerios from the local Sainsbury's, they're generally not going to be very dangerous. And what it seems can happen sometimes is you get kind of low-level offenders who will go into prison, and where it's such a tough environment, they've got to up their toughness, and it becomes like a kind of college of crime almost. So you go in for something fairly minor, but then you're encountered with such a kind of hostile environment that it hardens you fairly quickly, and then you come out in this kind of society's eyes as a criminal rather than as a person who went to prison.
Our taxes should be used to create better societies, right? I think everyone would say that. How that money is spent, that's where people have disagreements. But I think it benefits all of us, right? Where we have less crime, and this is a way to have less crime, right? Like it makes like perfect sense to me.
Well, yeah, but it's funny because I feel like intuitively a lot of people disagree because you think, no, if prison's really horrible, it will make people really want to stay out of prison. But the kind of available evidence indicates the exact opposite. Like, I think Norway has one of the lowest levels of recidivism or reoffending in the whole world. And their prisons are like famously quite nice. Like, you can study a degree in there. You've got an Xbox and stuff. They make it fairly comfortable. And I think it doesn't sort of rip people's humanity away, and they're able to, well, like you said earlier, sort of learn skills and actually have opportunities when they come out. And again, it's just not to ramble and rant, but it's just occurred to me because I live in Brixton, and I walk past the prison to get to the tube station, and I was accosted in the street once by a gentleman just saying, actually, what he said to me, I've just been released from prison. Have you got 20p for a cup of tea? And my first thought was, fucking hell, how long's he been inside that he thinks tea's 20p? And my second thought was, this is mental. Like, they've literally just said, okay, see you later. And he's come out with no money, just the clothes on his back, kind of no opportunities. No one's going to give him a job. Like, it's very much just, as soon as you get put out of the system, you're kind of the world's problem. And that's why if you can't get any opportunities, you can't get any money, some people they'll be desperate to get some money, which might force them into crime. And some people might not care because they might think, out of prison, at least I was getting fed.
So do we know what brand of tablets they're getting?
We don't, actually. They're unnamed here. Yeah, actually, that'd be cruel if they gave them like a Samsung one, not an iPad.
Well,
that is draconian.
The reason I'm asking is Nikki's birthday's coming up, and she's hankering for an iPad. So I might just do crime and see if I can keep it on the way out.
Well, I was thinking that they'd have to be careful not to make it too nice, because my rent's going up, so I might just do a little bit of crime just for a nice pad for free.
Gen Z TikTok creators are turning against Amazon. So a coalition of top TikTok stars is pledging to cease all work with Amazon, including shutting down storefronts and halting new partnerships with e-commerce platforms until the company meets the demands of the Amazon labor union. So just a bit of context, Amazon has been working with creators for a while, and it's getting them to sort of front storefronts. So that's a digital storefront where they talk about the sort of products that they like and make recommendations. And a union of TikTokers, presumably with a bit of power, a big following when they essentially create a coalition, are boycotting Amazon until they pay the 30,000 minimum wage, you know, increase sort of holidays, basic union stuff. I thought this was quite an interesting story because, A, you know, Gen Z get a lot of flack, activists on the face of it, but don't really do much. But this is coming from a group called Gen Z for Change. Presumably that's just young people. It'd be a bit disappointing if it was like organized by an old load of old guys. But presumably this is for Gen Z by Gen Z. And I think with TikTok, what we've found is that it's a different sort of community that you get on there from sort of Instagram and the YouTube community, which, you know, I know they're all cross-platform, but that seems like a very millennial or slightly older place. And on TikTok, it does seem that people share a more simple like look at the world and feel like that positivity and positive culture is something that they want to put to the forefront of their creations.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I feel like it's quite a colossal shift away from, I guess, the more, like, say 5 years ago, the more YouTube-based influencers, or there's so many on Instagram who basically they'll promote pretty much anything. Like, I've seen some like prank videos of this where like somebody will come up with the worst brand ever that has nothing to do with an influencer, and they'll make the company sound pretty awful. And if the bag is big enough, to use the argo of my generation, they'll just be up for it. Whereas this is kind of one of the first times that you've seen quite a lot of people, or young people in particular, en masse putting principles ahead of profit, I guess. And what will be interesting is to see whether this does anything, because at the moment they haven't really done that much, because they're probably getting brand deals hand over foot elsewhere anyway.
Brands that will definitely be retailing via Amazon anyway, right?
Well, exactly. And is it just because Amazon are probably the company that most famously get the most flack for this sort of thing? Are they doing sort of endless research on the various other companies that they're representing? Or is this to kind of garner good public feeling amongst their audience? I'm probably being a little bit cynical there, but what will be interesting is whether Amazon actually do anything about this and react to we'll get other people.
But you make a good point, because Amazon would have been plowing a lot of money into creators with the view that these guys hold the key to converting new younger audiences onto Amazon platforms, right? So if they have that belief on one scale, then they have to have the belief that it's going to be damaging to them on the other, right? You can't have one without the other. You can't think that these guys can bring you a load of new customers because they are so powerful, and then think that they can't take them away from you. Do you see what I'm saying? They have belief in the model. They have belief in the influencer model. So if they have that belief, then presumably they can die by that belief.
Yeah, if anything, I'd say the negative is potentially more powerful, because if someone's just saying, oh, shop here, like, this is a good brand, you've still got other options. You might be drawn to that. But if someone's kind of categorically saying, don't shop here because of these reasons, then that would probably be quite powerful for somebody who takes that person's view seriously.
Well, I don't think that they'll have a direct response to it, apart from an acknowledgement, perhaps, of it happening. But I don't think Amazon are going to be seen to be able to bend that easily, because they won't want to be in the position that every time a bunch of creators gets together, Amazon have to bend to their demands, right? It just comes back to...
That's the kind of "we don't negotiate with terrorists" kind
and that's
of
what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we'd like to acknowledge we don't have great sound today, so apologies for that. So if you've stayed till the end of the podcast, you are a trooper and we appreciate you.
Yeah, hi, Mum. We'll see.
Right, so where do people go and find the cool shit newsletter, -experience, -extravaganza?
ZacAgency.com/cool-sht/.
Really is a rigmarole, isn't it? Really is.
Yeah, genuinely, that made my head spin for a moment there.
All right, James, well, thank you very much for joining remotely this week, as I did. I mean, we both did. It's impossible for us both not to be remote.
Yeah, sure, but I joined remotely in the office. So let's get that straight. I turn up and I do my job.
All right, well, listen, I look forward to having a full house back next week. And thanks very much for your time.
Oh, always a pleasure.
See ya.
See ya.